pushing her luck and she didn't even know it. Dr. Wheel was fair, but even he had his limits. "Babes, hold off on how you come at him," Bones said. "We can discuss business later." "It's okay," Dr. Wheel said, raising his hand. "Either she's too stupid to realize the person I am, or she's very brave. Either way, I'm intrigued." He focused on Farah. "Go ahead. What do you want from me?" She thought about all of the people causing her problems. She considered Eleanor, but decided against getting them involved with her, because she wanted to make sure she was murdered herself. Lessa was out of town, and for now appeared to be too scared to cause her problems. There were two people left.
"There's a girl, her name is Rhonda. I can't find her, and she's causing me problems. The other person is Randy, and I don't know what he's capable of either, so I want both of them taken care of."
"Give Bones the information, and we'll see to it that your problem is solved. Anything else?" Farah smiled.
"One last question."
"Shoot," Dr. Wheel responded.
"What was the name of the facility that you all escaped from?"
"Crescent Falls. Heard of it before?" Chapter 20, Slade.
"We ain't got shit but time."
Slade sat in Markey's living room with his brothers and Judge and Grant. After all this time, they still couldn't find Eleanor. And Knox hadn't made another appearance either. There was nothing more they wanted than to solve the mystery and go back home. Della walked into the living room and sat in the recliner next to the sofa.
"Your cousin Barry just called back from Mississippi. He checked all of the old places Knox frequented, and just like I thought, he hasn't made contact."
She removed the gun from her waist and set it in her lap.
"Ever since she was shot at, she stayed strapped. Any news on your end?"
She looked at everyone. Grant sighed.
"We've been looking, but we had no luck finding Eleanor," he responded. "But it won't stop us from trying. We just have to remain here until something comes up."
He looked at Slade.
"Farah, on the other hand, has proven to be interesting. I've observed her keeping time with several different men who all end up dead."
Slade was uneasy.
"Fuck do you mean?"
Grant laughed.
"It's clear. We follow her, she meets someone, and that person later dies. People die all the time. Whether Farah meets them should not be a question. I thought you were looking for leads on Knox."
"This is a lead. If she's killing people who later show up in the news, she could have possibly killed Knox too.
You may not want to admit this, but your girl is very capable of this kind of crime. First off, she's not my girl, and if you think she knows something more, question her yourself."
"We've been trying to, but she's never home," Grant continued.
"And whoever she's rolling with now seems to be good at shaking us. When we're trying to follow her, it's easier trying to get a hold of the president."
"Well, that's on you, not me," Slade responded, relieved she couldn't be caught.
"What about Randy?" Della asked, with the narrow eyes. "He took a shot at me, and I still want him taken care of."
"He high and low, real low," Grant said.
"From what I understand, he never came out since the hit the boys took on his shop. But that nigga who handed the one they call Lollipop over to us?"
"They call him Vet," Killer interrupted.
"Whatever his name is, we've been following him hoping he'd lead us to him. I have somebody on him right now. The moment he finds out where Randy is, he'll let us know, and we'll go take care of him too."
"Good, because although it won't make me breathe easier or bring my boy back, it will make me feel better, having some bloodshed around here,"
Della responded, looking at her family.
"I know you don't want to hear this, Slade, but I'm going to take a chance on talking to Farah myself. Are you cool with that?"
He wasn't, but he wouldn't let her know.
"Do what you have to, Ma. I always do."
He paused.
"So what's up with audio? How's he holding out back home?"
"He's fine," Della responded.
"Don't worry about it, son. He just mad now, but you made the right call by sending him back down south. He would have gotten himself in trouble or killed. And I support your decision 100%.
They were just about to discuss more details when Markey, whom they hadn't seen in months, walked through the door. 50 pounds lighter, he'd look like life was weighing him down.
"Where the fuck have you been?"
Slade asked, stepping up to him. You had niggas thinking you were dead.
He walked into the kitchen and grabbed a water bottle. It's a long story.
Does it have anything to do with Randy? Slade continued.
Like I said, it's a long story.
We ain't got shit but time.
Chapter 21, Randy.
Stop telling people that before they take you away. Is that what you want?
Randy cruised down the street on the way to the Serenity Meadows senior citizen's home, checking his rearview mirror repeatedly. Although he didn't want to admit it, the Baker boys had him on the run. He knew it was a bad move to shoot at them with their mother in the car, but hindsight was 20/20. When he saw he wasn't being followed, he parked his Yukon in the back of the Serenity Meadows senior citizen's home. It was one of his two secret hideouts. He donated more drug money to the facility than any other sponsor, past or present. So much so that the management agreed he should have his own office. He used it to discuss business with people he didn't trust in his home. Holding a brown paper bag filled with fresh bagels, he was greeted by Harriet Tillman, the program director for the center, the moment he walked inside.
Hello, Mr. George.
She took the bag from his hands and saluted him with a wide smile. Can I get you something to drink? We just made some fresh lemonade. It's in the refrigerator. It's a little too sweet for my taste, but you might like it.
Randy walked past her and toward his office. I'm not hungry or thirsty.
She could be a pest at times because she was always interested in what he was doing. She followed Randy toward his office.
We have been having a lot of strange people around here lately.
Chill bumps covered his skin.
I was going to tell you earlier, but you called and said you were on your way.
Strange people.
Randy felt his world tilted. Slowly he approached.
What did they say?
She stepped back into the wall.
Nothing. Just asked a bunch of questions about you. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you sooner.
Fuck you, sorry, he yelled in her face. What exactly did they say?
They asked if we knew you and stuff like that.
He shook his head in anger.
Don't worry, we told them nothing, I promise.
When he backed away, she exhaled.
Oh, we would never do anything to compromise you here. You've done so much for us already.
They walked into his large office.
I bet.
He smirked.
It wouldn't have anything to do with the cash I pour into this place now, would it?
She frowned. I didn't mean it in that way. She paused. Of course we appreciate all of the work you've done for us, but we would keep your privacy all the same. He laughed.
I'm just fucking with you.
He took his coat off and placed it on the rack.
What did these strange people look like?
African-American, young, she shrugged.
They didn't sound like they were from the area, but I couldn't be sure.
Country accents? I'm not sure.
He placed his hand over his face. Someone found him, and he wondered if it was the Baker boys.
Obviously, I won't be able to come around for a while. That is, until I find out what's going on.
He sighed.
Is Mrs. Hammond still hallucinating and causing problems in the wings with the other guests?
Yeah. But I called the doctor like you said. She seems to be getting worse by the day. And since she's senile, it's kind of hard to know what's sparking it. It's like it's happening from nowhere.
Are you monitoring who's coming in and out of her room like I suggested?
He paused.
Because I was told she had some guests who looked suspect.
We try to watch her guests, but we also like for our patients to have family members visit. And if I'm not mistaken, the only one who comes to visit Mrs. Hammond is her daughter, Mooney. Whenever she comes, she seems very happy.
Randy frowned. This woman is crazy, Mrs. Tillman. She doesn't know what it means to be happy anymore.
He grabbed a small tube of antibacterial gel off of the desk, squirted it in his hands, and wiped them together.
Where is she now?
Oh, in her room.
She looked worried.
But if I were you, I wouldn't go in there. Earlier today, she was cursing everyone out and didn't seem too nice.
I don't care how feisty she is. I can handle myself. Before she started losing her mind,
She told me I was the son she never had. Remember that?
Yes, I do. It's just that she was very mean, and her daughter left a note with the staff that she didn't want anyone bothering her today. I want to respect her wishes.
Respect mine first, he said. And if her daughter wants to talk to me, be sure to tell her that she wanted me to be a part of her life. Make sure you make that clear, okay?
She shook her head. Yes, it's clear. He stood up and moved toward the door.
Let me see how she's doing.
Randy walked to the cafeteria to get Mrs. Hammond's favorite treat, tapioca pudding, before walking into her room. He stood in her doorway and watched how she sat next to the window in her chair. The sunlight beamed against her chocolate skin, and to him, she was stunning. Randy always had a fetish for older women, but he kept that and a few other sick secrets to himself. Although he found her attractive, Randy had other motives. He was dirt broke, and Mrs. Hammond had a home, which up until recently had gone unused. With the heat he had on his back, without her house, he would probably be dead. When he finally entered her room, he closed and locked the door behind him. Then he placed the pudding on the table next to where she was. Her long gray hair hung down her back, just the way he liked it. Her skin was wrinkly, brown, and covered in age spots. She looked vulnerable and very seductive to him.
Mrs. Hammond, are you okay?
He asked, approaching her chair. He used a softer voice whenever he first entered the room to throw her off. Because she was partially blind and could not see,
I came to see how you're doing, to make sure everyone has been treating you right. That man came in here and took all my money, she yelled, speaking in the direction of his voice. And I think my maids are in on it, too. I want them out of my house right now. Do you hear me? I want them gone.
I'll fire all of them. Don't worry about it, Randy said, rubbing her hair softly.
You can trust me.
She smiled.
You promise? Because they'll take everything I have if you let them.
She grew silent.
Wait, where's my daughter? Where's Mooney? She told me to not to talk to anyone. She told me if someone came in here, who are you anyway?
Her memory recall frightened him.
I'm a friend, Mrs. Hammond.
He unzipped his pants and removed his penis from his boxers. He was rock hard as he stepped in front of her.
You don't have to worry about anything. But I don't want a friend. I want my daughter.
Mrs. Hammond, enough with all that talk. He paused. Looked down at her.
You got to take your medicine now. So open up.
Before she could protest, he shoved his penis into her mouth and moved her head back and forth. Mrs. Hammond told the staff members that some strange man was putting stuff inside of her mouth and vagina, but no one believed her. Had they taken the time to seriously evaluate her concerns, they would have discovered that she had been raped on multiple occasions. Unfortunately for her, the only thing they cared about was his money. Tears ran down Mrs. Hammond's face as he ejaculated inside her mouth. Randy was a sick man who was abused most of his life by those coming in and out of his life, and as a result, he was unable to enjoy consenting sex. If he was going to get off, he had to take advantage of the vulnerable. Bondage, rape, brutality, and humiliation were all parts of how he went about having sex. When he was done, he eased his clothes back on, grabbed the pudding off the table, and fed Mrs. Hammond spoonful after spoonful to mask his disgusting deed. She sobbed softly until she tasted the sweetness of her favorite treat. After it was almost gone, a smile spread on her face. Luckily for her, bad thoughts came and went, never holding her hostage for too long. Talking in his regular voice instead of the fake one he used when he first entered her room, he asked,
"Is everything okay, Miss Hammond? You look sad."
He wanted to see what she remembered. She trusted this voice, unable to differentiate between the two. Whispering low, she said,
"The man came into my room, the one I don't like. He came back, and he hurt me again. You can't let him come back, okay?
Brandy continued to feed her as she opened her mouth wider. What are you talking about? He eased the spoon into her mouth.
You're always talking about a man. Stop telling people that before they take you away. Is that what you want?
But there was a man in here, she whispered. It's the one who hurts me over and over again.
Then she stopped eating the food, and her mouth hung open. She'd forgotten her thought.
I want my daughter. Where's my daughter?
She's not here.
Relax and eat this food.
I don't want it. I want Mooney, she yelled. You too stupid to know anything about my daughter. Tell my maid to bring my jewelry and get my daughter on the phone now.
When he saw she was riding the wave of another mental rant, he smirked and dropped the spoon. This was why he loved taking advantage of her. She couldn't keep a thought long enough to tell anybody what was actually happening to her. But he put a little something different in her treat today. Something to put her out of her misery for good. Originally, he planned to kill her slowly, to prevent from getting noticed. But someone knew about his location, and time was of the essence. He could no longer come back. Within an hour after he was long gone, she'd be dead, and he would be the beneficiary of her estate. He realized Mooney would contest the will. When that happened, Randy would call upon Mrs. Tillman to prove his case and to say that she looked upon him as one of her children. And if that didn't do the trick, and if Mooney persisted, he would put her out of her misery too. When his cell phone rang, he removed it from his pocket and saw Marquis's name. He'd been looking for him for months. He just hoped, for his sake, that he was telling him something that he wanted to hear. Chapter 22, Farrah.
I felt complete. I felt right. And I never looked back.
You're driving too fast, boy,
Farrah screamed at the top of her lungs.
Slow down before you get us killed.
He didn't decrease his speed.
Let me out, she laughed. Please.
After Farrah snatched the steering wheel to the right, Bones brought the two-seated go-kart to a slow roll and parked. Laughing at her nervousness, he removed his helmet and held out his hand to help her out. She removed her helmet and accepted his hand.
I should kick your ass. I see you like to play too much.
She stood up and dusted the back of her blue jeans off.
Promises, promises.
He chuckled as they walked to the counter and returned their equipment before walking toward his white Lexus. He opened the door for her and she slid inside.
Hungry? After all that yelling you did, your throat should at least be dry.
She playfully hit him on the arm.
I'm a little hungry, but thanks to you, I'm thirstier.
She smiled.
I think you were just doing that shit to hear me scream.
I can't lie. I do love a good scream. As he slid into traffic, she couldn't wrap her mind around the fact that she was going on a date with someone other than Slade. Although she loved everything about Bones, including his long dreads, dark chocolate complexion, and the way he carried himself, there was still a lot of mystery surrounding him.
Where are we going? She asked.
First, we're going to hook up with Mayoni and Carlton, and then we're going to grab something to eat. After that, the night is on you.
Why? You got somewhere else you'd rather be?
She shrugged.
Not really.
She looked at her hands.
I'm kind of feeling this time we have alone. We've been hanging out, but I don't really know anything about you. Can you tell me about yourself, whatever you want me to know?
What you want to know, Farrah Cotton? She swallowed.
Can you tell me about your life in Crescent Falls?
He moved a little around in the driver's seat.
What you want to know about it? It was so long ago, and I don't want to give you the wrong impression about me.
Why were you there?
And were you, he chuckled. I wasn't castrated. I'm definitely still intact.
Farrah appeared relieved.
I knew eventually you would ask me about that place, but I hoped I'd have more time to explain to you.
He sighed. I was one of the first 15 that Dr. Wheel was talking about.
Why were you in there? I grew up thinking there was something wrong with me because I loved inflicting pain on my girlfriends when I was in high school. It was always consensual, but one day my girlfriend's mother walked in and caught us fucking in her room. I had one of her father's ties wrapped around her neck and was fucking her from behind. Oh, she was loving it. He grinned, recalling the event, but her mother didn't. And instead of fessing up that we played that game at least 15 times before, she claimed I raped her. I was arrested, and everything I owned in my room was searched. They were trying to figure out what caused me to act that way. He shook his head. My parents were popular in the political community, and they didn't want the flack, so to their minds, it was easier to send me away and not deal with it at all. That was 10 years ago, he sighed. When I was 17, I'm 27 now. I haven't seen my family since. He looked over at her. So what's your story? I suffer from something called porphyria all my life. My family members suffer from it too, but they seem to do okay on the medicine the doctor gave them. Never quite worked for me. She paused. Well, one day I met with Grand Mike, and he gave me my first taste of blood, and everything about my life changed at that moment. I felt complete. I felt right, and I never looked back. You grew up in a violent home? Yes. She thought about Brownie. Very violent. So it's not about the pain with you. It's about the blood. Yes. She looked over at him. So what is it for you? Administering pain. Always. His eyes stayed on the road. Do you think you could ever be a slave? She shrugged. I never thought it before. I guess I would be willing to try for you. They continued down the road until they met up with Mayoni and Carlton in the restaurant parking lot. Both of them wore huge grins on their faces as they approached Bones and Farrah. You haven't looked at the news today, have you, Farrah? Farrah shook her head no. Carlton whipped out his phone and showed her a news article about a 20-something female who was found on the side of the road with her throat slit. That part of the story was ordinary. There was always some dead girl on the side of the road. What stood out was the victim's name, Rhonda Marshall. Farrah looked up at them and met their grins. Are you serious? They leaned against the car and chuckled. Wow, you guys work fast, don't you? You haven't seen. Before Carlton could finish his sentence, a bullet whizzed between Carlton and Farrah, removing the tip of his nose. He dropped to the ground and released the .45 on his hip. The driver in a black car bombarded the area where they stood with bullets, firing in the direction of the shooter. Carlton had one mission, to kill. Not alone in his quest, Bones and Mayoni matched his shots blow for blow to put down whoever wanted them dead. Farrah hid behind a car and did her best to avoid getting killed. But the loud noises of the gun popping off didn't put her at ease. When Bones stood up and moved toward the car, aiming in the driver's direction, it was only then that she lifted from her spot. Suddenly, it was quiet, and no one was shooting. The driver was dead, and the windows were splattered with blood. Fuck, Carlton said, holding his nose as blood poured from his face. Who the fuck was that? Farrah was just as shocked as they were, until she saw someone opening the car door and taking off running. When the person turned around and she saw her face, she felt faint. It was the person she'd been looking for the past few months, Eleanor McClendon. A rage like she hadn't felt in a while crept over her, partly because, instead of going into hiding, Eleanor had come after her. And secondly, because she knew she could never tell her friends that someone she knew was involved, for fear that they would blame her and cut her off. It was settled. No matter what she had to do, she was going to kill Eleanor McClendon, even if it was with her bare hands. Chapter 23. Elise. If you dumb enough to think that we saying the same thing, you need the help, not Farrah. Although it was cool outside, Elise had all of the windows to her apartment wide open. She did it whenever company came over, knowing that not too many people could deal with the natural scent of her body. In all honesty, she didn't want to be speaking to her present guest anyway, but wanted one last attempt to talk some sense into him. They were sitting at an old wooden table in the kitchen. Would you like some coffee? Elise asked Dr. Martin. I just made a fresh pot. smells delicious. He rubbed his arms for warmth. Yes, I'll take a cup. Although I like mine with cream and no sugar. Elise stood up and opened the refrigerator. Will milk do? He smiled. Of course. He rubbed his arms again. Is there any reason why you have all of the windows open?
Is there any reason you keep interrogating my family after getting all of the information that you needed already from Farah?
She made the cups of coffee.
I really wish you didn't look at it that way. Although, I understand why you would.
When both of them held cups of coffee in beautiful pink mugs, Elise got to the question at hand.
And the windows are open for your comfort, not mine.
It's because of your odor. It doesn't bother me. I've been knowing you for years and understand your concern.
Elise closed all of the windows and sat back at the table. What can I do for you, Dr. Martin? You seemed very upset on the phone earlier today.
I am upset. He took a sip.
I spoke to the officer again when she called me to follow up, and she admits to applying for a room in Farah's apartment. What she didn't admit to is harassing her. In fact, she claims Farah's friends pulled her over at a gas station and threatened her life.
He wiped his finger along the rim of the cup.
I guess I can't understand why you and your family can't seem to see what's going on with Farah. It's so obvious that she's out of control and exhibiting signs of psychosis. I mean, are you okay with your granddaughter hurting other people?
Elise sighed heavily.
Me and my family are my business, Dr. Martin. I can't understand what you want me to say differently about it. If Farah says she isn't hurting anyone, then she isn't.
I mean, does the authorities have proof?
It's not what I want you to say. It's what I want you to do. Dr. Martin, like I told you at my granddaughter's house, there was a misunderstanding on what I shared with you. And now you're taking things out of context.
He shook his head in disgust.
Even if I wanted to control her, I couldn't. She's an adult.
He placed his cup down.
I believe you have more control over her than you realize. What exactly do you want, Dr. Martin? If there's one thing I hate, it's a man beating around the bush.
There was an eerie silence, a silence so long, it felt like a third person was in the room.
I want you to have her committed. I have the information to a great facility that can assist her. There used to be another facility for people with her mental illness called Crescent Falls, but it was dismantled many years ago.
He paused.
Anyway, Farah's the first of her kind with this type of multiple diagnosis, and I think she could benefit if she was observed around the clock. And what diagnosis is that? Far as I knew, you only treated her for porphyria.
You're right. And I can't be sure without seeing her that she has anything else. Although I'm fairly positive.
Elise, I believe she has porphyria and a touch of something called Renfield syndrome.
What is that?
Renfield syndrome is when someone believes that in order to survive, they must drink blood. It's modern vampirism. I don't know what happened in your granddaughter's life, but she's pretty delusional at this point. Was she raised up in a violent home?
Elise thought about Brownie and Asher.
If they weren't terrorizing people in the neighborhood, they were hurting people who they believed did them wrong. Of course, they were violent. In fact, Asher was in prison for killing a family of three just because their son scratched his car. But in her opinion, most black children grew up in less than savory environments and learned how to survive.
My granddaughter wasn't raised up in a home any more violent than other people. She had her problems, but then again, don't we all?
It doesn't mean she needs to be committed.
Elise, to my understanding, her mother is dead.
Elise wanted to jump across the table and snatch his throat out, but she refrained.
And if that's the case, you're pretty much all she has left.
She needs you. You are a strong woman, and I'm asking you to help me heal your granddaughter.
I'll talk to her father, Elise responded. He's in prison right now, but I don't want to make a decision like this without him.
He seemed irritated and twisted in his seat. He can't even make decisions for himself. How can he for her?
He asked in a serious tone.
She needs your help, Elise. The kind of help that an in-house facility could provide. And right now, I'm coming to you out of respect.
You want me to agree to have my granddaughter put in a facility over something she said to me over the phone? Are you that delusional?
She told you she was drinking blood. I know you said she was drunk when she shared the information, but I don't believe it. A lot of people have gone missing in her building alone. This deserves some serious attention. He looked at her with pleading eyes.
Even if she is,
she swallowed.
Drinking blood, how do you know she's hurting people?
Because nobody in their right mind would rightfully give up their blood. That's why.
I'm not sure, she shrugged. If she is drinking blood, she may have ran into someone who can provide. There are a lot of people out here who may have the same fetishes she does. Whatever the situation, it's her life, and she has the right to live it.
Elise pushed her coffee to the side.
Now, I know you're concerned, but it's time for you to let it go.
She sat back in her seat.
At this point, there is nothing else I can do.
You need to know that I will never forget that you told me that night on the phone. I haven't told the officer yet, because I wanted to come to you and to your family first. He took another sip of the coffee. But what you said keeps me up late at night and ruined any chance of me having a normal life. I want peace, Elise, and I can't have it knowing what your granddaughter is out there doing.
What does that mean?
She frowned, feeling violence wash over her. It means that I have a responsibility to let someone know. Now, I want to have her checked out by a licensed professional and hopefully committed willfully into a facility. If we don't do it that way, the only other way I can think of is by contacting the authorities. I hope you understand, but you really leave me no other choice. Silence stood between them for an eternity.
Dr. Martin, I had Brownie when I was 12 years old. A teacher I cared about decided that he would teach me how to be a woman by taking my virginity. It was the worst experience of my life. Prior to losing my daughter and grandchild, I'm sorry, she put her hand up to silence him. I don't need sympathy. Her hands dropped. Before Brownie died, I shielded her from everything because I wanted her to be safe and never violated like I was. I was strict with her in some ways, lenient in others. I allowed her to say and to see more things than she should have as a teenager. And because of it, she developed a fucked up sense of entitlement. Make no mistake, I feel responsible every day that my leniency may have been the cause of her murder. But yesterday, I made a decision that nothing matters. My daughter is gone, and my other grandchildren are still here. And I'm going to protect them to the best of my ability. And I won't let you or anybody else get in the way of that. I hope I'm making myself clear.
And I want you to protect them, starting by getting Farrah the help she needs. Don't you see, Elise? We are saying the same things.
Dr. Martin, if you're dumb enough to think that we're saying the same thing, you need the help, not Farrah.
She grinned.
I need you to stay far away from my family, so far that I won't see or hear from you ever again.
What about Mia and Shadow? They have porphyria, which I have successfully treated for years.
Not a problem of yours anymore. This is my final warning, and another will not follow it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
He backed up in his chair. I have a feeling you are threatening me, and I don't take well to threats.
And you should know that I'm making a promise. Stay away from Farrah. Stay away from Mia. Stay away from Shadow, and stay away from me. I will do everything I can to see to it that Farrah gets the help she needs, but it will be on my time.
Dr. Martin stood up, drank the rest of his coffee, and set the mug back on the table. Thank you for the coffee, Elise. I really appreciate it. It was the best I had in a long time. He put his coat on. You have a good day.
You do the same.
She was certain that it wouldn't be the last time she'd hear from him. But she put her warning into full effect, and whether he lived or died was all on him. Chapter 24, Farrah.
I might be willing to help you out, provided it's worth it.
The night sky enveloped Farrah's car as she sat inside of it, staring at the dope house she was about to enter. Something told her Eleanor wasn't in there, but it was worth a shot. After the attempt Eleanor took on her life, she realized she had to kick her search efforts up to a notch to find Eleanor before Eleanor found her again. On the news that morning, she learned that the driver Bones murdered was a dope boy out of Chicago. She wondered how he was connected to Eleanor before the gun battle. Farrah wrote her off as an old lady on heroin who sold small bags of weed to feed her habit. She never once considered that she had the ability to rally the troops. She couldn't make the same mistake again. As she sat in her car, her cell phone rang. She unconsciously answered while looking out of the window. Hello?
Farrah, why haven't you been answering your phone? Coconut screamed. Me and Jacob been worried sick about you. This is so rude and so wrong.
Farrah removed the phone from her ear, looked at it, and frowned. The Jake situation was getting a little creepier than she thought, and the moment she started making money with the fold, she couldn't wait to cut them off. As it stood now, the threesome they participated in allowed her to pay her bills and put food on the table. God only knew what Shadow and Mia did with the little money they made. She put the phone back to her ear.
I'm fine, Coconut, she sighed. Just a lot on my mind, that's all.
You fucked up about Rhonda, too, huh? She asked softly. Why are you going through this alone? Times like this, you're supposed to be with friends.
Farrah shook her head. I have no idea what you're talking about.
She lied.
Wait, you ain't hear about Rhonda?
She paused to catch her breath.
She was murdered last week. I wanted to talk to you instead of leaving a message on your phone, but you never answered.
I heard about the murder.
Farrah was as dry as cornflakes with no milk. Silence.
You heard about the murder and?
And what?
Oh, Farrah, you sound like you don't give a fuck.
Silence.
Farrah, you didn't have anything to do with what happened to her, did you? I mean, you did say she stepped to you at IHOP a while back. Was this out of revenge?
I can't believe you even coming at me like that. Just because I'm not crying my eyes out don't mean I don't give a fuck.
Now, I'm sorry to hear about Rhonda, but I have a life over here, too.
She paused.
Anyway, how's night?
He didn't take Rhonda's death too well. He blamed himself for throwing her out on the streets after losing the baby.
The last I heard, he was walking around drunk and got locked up for firing into store windows for no reason.
Farrah shook her head.
He loves blaming other people for the shit that goes on in his life.
Farrah observed two pregnant women walking into the dope house. She guessed to get a fix.
When is the funeral?
It was yesterday, Farrah, and it was sad, too. You should have been there.
Me coming to the funeral won't bring Rhonda back.
Silence.
That's the second funeral you didn't go to when a friend died. You didn't go to Natasha's, and now Rhonda's. I lost both of my friends in 2 years, and you all I have left. Yet you act like you don't care about me or nobody else. What's wrong with you?
Farrah sighed.
You trying to say I don't care about you? I allowed you to use me more than anybody else in my life, even to the point where you got me fucking you and your boyfriend at the same time. Don't tell me I don't care about you, Coconut.
I'm sorry you miss Rhonda more than me, but I have to go. I'll call you back later.
Coconut was the least of her troubles, and if she stayed on the phone with her long enough, she would have told her so. Besides, with Rhonda gone, she hoped the pictures would stop flowing. With Lessa out of town, the only person she had to worry about was Eleanor. She eased out of the car and dipped into the dope house. The stench in the dope house was sickening, but Farrah didn't care. From the entrance of the hellhole, she stood in the middle of the floor and observed the disgusting surroundings.
Excuse me,
she said to a man sitting on the floor with his head against the wall.
You know Eleanor, an older white lady with a fat ass?
She pointed at her own.
I think she used to be a stripper or some shit like that.
He looked up at her from the floor. His head rolled around loosely on his neck, and slobber rolled out of the corner of his mouth.
You got some money? Some change? If you do, I'll tell you anything you want to know about anybody.
I got a little change, but you got to tell me what I want to know first.
He frowned.
Who are you anyway?
He adjusted himself on the floor.
The police or something?
Nah, I'm just a friend. And ain't no need in you worrying about all that.
You need to be worried about what the fuck I'm asking you right now. Now, do you know her or not? I don't have all night to be fucking around with you.
I know of her. He nodded off again.
But she ain't here right now. She just left.
He wiped the corner of his mouth, like, 5 minutes ago, I think.
If you a friend, shouldn't you know that already?
I'm here, ain't I?
Ferris said angrily.
Now, where is she? It's important that I get to her right away.
Like I said, that's gonna cost you. But don't worry, though. I'll take you to her for the right price.
He scanned over Farrah's body.
Ooh, so what you working with?
He grabbed the edge of her jeans, and she kicked him off. She could see his dick harden in his dingy slacks and wanted to throw up.
What exactly are you asking for?
She placed her hands on her hips.
Because if it's pussy, you can forget about that. If it's money, I might be willing to help you out, provided it's worth it.
He laughed. I figured you weren't about to give me none of that sweet thing. My luck ain't ever been that good. He licked his lips.
Nah, sweetness. Just give me a few bucks, and I'll take you to her deal.
He stood up and extended his hand. She looked at it, but had no intention of shaking it. Her instincts told her to leave, but she ignored them.
Deal.
Eager to put Eleanor out of her misery, Farrah reached into her Louis Vuitton purse to grab her wallet. The moment she did, she was struck in the back of the head with a bottle. She plummeted to the dirty floor, and her lips pressed against a used condom. She tried to get her bearings together when suddenly her purse was ripped from her grasp. She turned over and kicked and hit him, but it didn't seem to be helping. Seconds later, other people got in on the party. There seemed to be at least 20 people striking her from all areas of her body. In the end, she knew she was being robbed, and there was nothing she could do about it.
Get the fuck off me! She yelled,
trying to land blows hard enough to stop them.
Leave me alone!
No one listened as they worked overtime to take everything she owned.
We gonna leave you alone, bitch, after we take everything that you got,
said someone from behind her. When they were finished, she was stripped of everything of value. Her purse was gone, her shoes were gone, her coat was gone, and even the jewelry around her neck and fingers. She lay on the dirty floor, crying her eyes out. It became apparent that her life was so far out of hand that it wasn't funny anymore. After everyone was gone and she was surrounded by silence, she got up and limped out of the house. She could barely see out of one of her eyes, and blood streamed out of her nose. The cool air attacked her arms as she hobbled down the street, looking for some help. Most people saw the condition she was in, but they stayed as far away from her as possible. She felt lost, until suddenly someone beeped at her.
Damn, baby, you out here looking hard as shit.
The voice came from a blue Mustang.
You want a ride?
Farrah looked him over. He was a light-skinned nigga with a low haircut and hazel brown eyes. Since he didn't have a country accent and looked harmless enough, she decided to take him up on his offer. Besides, she wasn't even close to her house, and since they stole her purse, she couldn't even afford to catch a cab.
Yes, if you can take me home, I would appreciate it, but come on in.
He opened the passenger door, and she slid inside.
I'll take you wherever you want to go. The last thing I want is for a pretty thing like you to get sick on me.
Farrah hopped into the warm car and was immediately at ease due to the heat. Although it was no longer winter, the air was still chilly.
What happened to you, baby?
He observed her battered and bruised frame.
And why you got all those scars on your face? I know you're not letting no nigga bang you out. You too pretty for all that shit.
She sat back into the seat and closed her eyes. She was trying to prevent more tears from streaming out.
It's a long story, but I appreciate if you would just let me ride in silence. I know it's your car and everything,
but I'm not much on company right now. He looked at her and frowned.
And who the fuck are you, some sort of queen?
Her eyes popped open. His total disposition changed.
Bitch, this is my bride, not yours. I'll call the shots in this motherfucker.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to come off like that. The last thing she needed was to get tossed out on her ass. She had to come correct, quick. I just had a bad night. He pulled over and parked.
I was just looking out for you, but since you got an attitude, get the fuck out.
She wasn't anywhere near home, so it was time to beg.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I just had a long day.
Farrah, that's what you don't understand. I don't give a fuck about you or your day. As a matter of fact, when I saw the great job my peoples did to that pretty little face of yours, I couldn't have been more pleased. He grabbed her by the chin and moved her head left and right. Them motherfuckers were brilliant. It's amazing what people will do for a little rock. The hairs on the back of her neck rose, and she slapped his hand off of her face.
How'd you know my name? She backed up to the window. I ain't tell you shit about me.
He laughed.
You ain't gotta tell me shit about you, bitch. Who are you with? Eleanor? Rhonda?
She paused.
Randy?
He pulled a 9mm from under the seat and aimed it in her direction.
I won't tell you again. Get the fuck out my ride.
She was so frustrated by people following her and not knowing what was going on that she'd given up.
If you gon' kill me, just do it already, she cried. I don't give a fuck anymore.
Calling her bluff, he fired out of his open window.
Do you really mean that?
Realizing she was almost hit, she quickly undid her seatbelt and pushed the door open. Before the dude sped off, he threw a white envelope at her.
Enjoy the gift, bitch.
He sped off, and she grabbed the package on the ground. When she opened it, her legs gave out, and she felt the cold ground. Inside was a picture of her holding the property manager's son's hand as she led him to her car minutes before she killed him. There was also a picture of Gary, the man she met one day when she was walking with Lessa, her ex-roommate, to the store. It was the same day she killed him and sucked his blood. The mystery of who was taking pictures was heightened. It wasn't just about Knox now. Whoever it was wanted revenge.
Who are you?
She screamed out loud.
And what do you want from me?
Chapter 25. Killer.
I'm telling you, it don't look too good for your boy.
Killa had just finished bagging up the dope with Major for their next sale. Slade wasn't home because he was still searching for Eleanor with Judge, Grant, and his mother. This worked out for Killa because it left him some time to speak to Markey in private.
We done here, Killa said to Major. You mind if I rap to Markey in private?
No doubt, Major said, leaving the apartment to go to his own.
You want to grab a beer with me right quick? I wanted to rap to you about a few things. Plus, we haven't seen you in months and you look bad, man.
What is it? All the weight I lost done gave you some competition? He joked.
Not even close, Killa said, nudging him on the arm. Come on, man, have a beer with me.
Killa made him nervous, but he knew his offer was a demand and not a request.
I guess I can have a drink with you. I don't want beer. I'll take a soda.
Killa walked into the kitchen and returned with two beers. He tossed one at Markey.
Fuck a soda. You gon' drink a beer. This shit is serious.
Despite his request, Markey accepted it, popped the top, and gulped half down.
Thanks, man. I guess I needed that anyway.
He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. So what's up? Killa wasn't about to tell him that prior to his mini vacation, he'd followed him. He wasn't going to tell him that he saw him go into their sworn enemy's house. Instead, he decided to give him the benefit of the doubt.
What made you disappear for so long without telling family? Don't you know how mad motherfuckers were?
I had some shit I had to sort out, he sighed, placing the beer down. And I finally figured out what I have to do.
Killa nodded.
Well, how you been holding up since you stopped working for Randy?
He shrugged. I'm not understanding the question.
You used to get a lot of money with him. So much you were able to move out of Mississippi without looking back. I'm just checking to make sure you handling it okay without him. I guess I'm fine. He rubbed his knees. Especially you and Slade put me on. It ain't like I'm broke. It's just different money.
Killa sipped his beer. He wasn't getting the response he wanted, and he was growing agitated.
You have anything you want to get off your chest, man? Anything at all?
Marky's phone went off in his pocket, indicating he had a message. He read it and immediately seemed edgy.
No, I'm fine. I wanted to rap to you about something. I know I could.
He set the beer on the table.
Do you know where Slade is?
He's out. Why?
No reason, he sighed. Look, I gotta go. Something came up that I have to see to.
He stood up and moved toward the door.
I'm gonna get up with you later, okay?
Before he left, Killa said,
Marky, I know we haven't been the closest, and I want to be the first to apologize for all that shit I did to you on my end. Almost losing audio and trying to find Knox reminded me about how important family is. And I wanted to tell you that if you got problems, I can help. If you in too deep, there ain't nothing I can't or won't do to pull you out. You understand what I'm saying? But you gotta tell me now.
Marky wanted to tell him so bad about the position Randy was putting him in, but he wanted to handle things on his own.
I know you got me, man. Just look out for your brothers, because you never know when you might not see them again.
He dapped him up. I love you, man. He left the apartment. Slade was sitting on the couch, thinking about Farrah with a beer in his hand. Although he was still working for Willie, money didn't seem important. The only thing on his mind these days was Knox and Farrah, in that order. He heard from his family that Farrah had been in and out of the building with some niggas. For her sake and theirs, he prayed he never saw it with his own eyes. Killa handed Slade a fresh beer and said,
How come we got places of our own, but we can't leave this nigga's apartment?
Killa laughed, looking around.
I don't know, he chuckled. I guess his spot feels more like home.
They clinked the cans together. It was the first place we landed after leaving Mississippi.
We've been holding the nigga Marquis's apartment hostage forever. I think it's about time to let him have it back, don't you?
I hope you're talking about yourself, too, Slade said, focusing back on the TV.
Anyway, no matter where I go, there always seems to be one too many niggas around. I just want peace and quiet.
You know any place you go? My gon' be, too. She's not keen on letting us out of her sight these days.
Slade sighed.
Tell me about it. Where's she at now?
Where Willie? They taking a liking to each other. What do you think about that?
Slade had a lot of theories about the matter. If he had to grab one off the top of his head, it would be that Willie was trying to do anything in his power to get the Baker boys to stay. And that included shacking up with his mother.
Not sure what I think about it right now, he shrugged. For his sake, I just hope he treats her right.
I'm with you on that, Killa replied.
Slade sipped his beer and looked up at the ceiling.
Anyway, I think I will start spending most of my time at my crib.
He looked over Marky's apartment.
And I know this nigga wants us out of here as soon as possible. He needs his space.
Killa sipped his beer and looked at the TV screen.
I think Marky can't be trusted, man. I don't know why, but my heart tells me he's bad news. What we gonna do about it if we have to step to him?
Slade cut the TV off and observed his brother to be sure he was hearing him correctly.
What you mean? What we gonna do if we gotta step to him? He's still family, Killa. The nigga done so much dumb shit in the past that if we gonna hurt him, it would have been done already.
Sometimes I think we read too much into dude, and it's time to back off a little.
He can't be trusted, Killa reiterated. Before he disappeared for months, I followed him over Randy's. This was after we had beef.
Why go over there and not tell us? It was the day audio went missing. I'm telling you, it don't look too good for your boy.
You know how he is. I don't know what's up with Marky, but I do know he would never do anything to go against the family. I put that on my life.
I hope you don't have to. He's blood, Killa, remember it.
Killa shook his head. He hated how his instincts were never respected. He was always written off when actually he was very keen, just like Knox.
I feel you on that. But why go over to Randy's house and not tell us? And what's up with the disappearance, huh?
Slade drank the rest of his beer.
Answer me this. Did you ask him? You questioning me like I got direct tap into his thinking process. Going to him directly could have given you every answer you needed, right?
I guess, he shrugged. To tell you the truth, I didn't ask him because he always got a lie for everything. I figured it would be a waste of time.
Well, maybe you should step to him like a man before you start pointing fingers at him like a child.
Chapter 26. Farrah. First, you have to prove it. After being robbed and given pictures by some unknown person, Farrah lay in her room, crying her eyes out. She hadn't even seen the members of the fold because she couldn't concentrate on anything but the fact that someone knew more about her than she did. Missing the unconditional love of her grandmother, she decided to call her for support. Because as much as she hated to admit it, she needed her love. The phone rang once before Elise answered in a sleepy voice.
Grandma, it's me, Farrah. She paused. You have time to talk?
Elise yawned. Of course I do, baby. And there ain't no need in you saying who you are. I know my children's voices when I hear them. She giggled. I'm glad you called, because I was going to call you myself.
Really? What about?
She rolled over on her back. Tell me what's going on with you first. How do you feel? You sound sad.
I'm awful, Grandma. I don't feel like myself.
She looked at the dark skies through her window. It was her favorite time of day. I can't really explain it.
You're probably exhausted. You have to get that right amount of rest, Farrah. Lately, you've been running around nonstop.
How do you know that, Grandma?
She asked, irritated. This is the first time I've talked to you in a while.
Just because you don't call me doesn't mean I don't know what's going on with you, Farrah. And I know you're out a lot because every time I call, Mia or Shadow answers and tell me you're not home.
A mind can't rest if a body doesn't.
I'm trying, Grandma. I have so many things going on, you just don't understand.
Silence.
Grandma, are you still there?
Yes, baby, I'm still here. Elise responded. I'm sorry if I was quiet. It's just that I want to say something to you, but I don't know how. I'm old, and sometimes my words come across the wrong way. You know what I mean.
Maybe you should just say it.
Elise sighed. I know you, but I wish I could take some of the pressure off of you. I always told your mother before she died to watch you. If only she would have listened.
Ah, I don't want to talk about Brownie. She was your daughter, but she wasn't my mother.
Elise fought hard to bite her tongue.
Farrah, I want to talk to you about that night. The one when you called me and told me what you did to make yourself feel better. Do you remember that night?
Farrah immediately had an attitude.
Of course I remember. You told Dr. Martin about it too.
Farrah, were you really drinking?
Grandma, please don't say that over the phone. Why can't you just leave that day alone? It's old news now.
I'm not trying to upset you. You know that. It's just that Dr. Martin came over here again the other day. He said something I didn't like, and I want to see where your head is at.
Are you drinking blood?
You just had to say it over the phone, didn't you?
Why can't you ever respect my wishes? What is it about me that you don't like?
It's like you never loved me.
You know that's not true. Then what is it?
She sobbed.
I told you what I said because I thought I could trust you. I believed you when you said you were in my corner.
Farrah, I'm concerned now more than ever because when I asked you later, you told me you were drunk and didn't mean any of it.
And I don't know if you realize it or not, but he's not letting up on his quest to catch you in the act.
If you are doing anything to hurt other people, I advise you to stop now while you still can.
What are you saying?
Farrah frowned. Is he trying to get me locked up or something? Because if that's the case, I already know.
Farrah, I'm begging you to stop doing whatever you're doing. That's all I'm going to say. You can choose to listen to me or not, but keep in mind that I warned your mother too, and she didn't take heed. Now I can only pray that God protects her soul.
You know what? You always talk about family this and family that. Why did you tell Dr. Martin in the first place? Whatever happens because of it is all your fault.
Silence.
Now Elise believed maybe Dr. Martin wasn't so far off.
Farrah, You need long-term help. I think you should come over here so we can discuss more options.
Long-term help?
Huh. She sat up straight in the bed. Just what the fuck is that?